This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. We're learning about West Virginia's only World War I flying ace this morning.
So what he tried to do, Louis Bennett did, was put together this group of West Virginians. I think there were 20 or 23 pilots, all from West Virginia, that he was training how to fly.
That story is coming up. And if there was an unregulated landfill in your backyard, you'd want to know about it, right? Stay tuned. This is West Virginia Morning. It came to our attention here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting that there's an undocumented and thus unregulated landfill in the Kanawha Valley. Our energy and environment reporter Brittany Patterson has been looking into it. She joins us this morning to discuss her findings. So, hi, Brittany.
Hi, Glynis.
So first, what's going on? Is it true that there's a mystery landfill near Charleston?
So here's what we know. From likely about the 1950s to at least the 70s, possibly 80s, the former chemical giant Union Carbide disposed of waste into about a 20-acre site located north of the tech center. It's next to a rail yard, and the site sits next to Davis Creek, which flows into the Kanawha River about a half mile from there. From a review of a lot of different records, it appears things like coal ash waste, lumber, paper, scrap polymer, and industrial grit processed by the South Charleston sewage treatment plant all went into this site. We also know it accepted a fiber called Dynel that Carbide made until the 70s. And another document shows that drums of chemicals were both dumped and buried here as well.
How did this site come to light?
In 2017, a private company that owns some land next to this landfill did some sampling and discovered that their property was contaminated with things like arsenic and barium and lead. This company called the Cortland Company, it basically uses this property like a parking lot. And they thought the pollution must be coming from Union Carbide's tech park, which is right next door. And so they sued Carbide, which is now owned by Dow, asking them for help to clean it up. But in the fall of 2019, the company deposed Carbide's head of remediation, and he said in that deposition that, in fact, there was another property nearby that was the cause of some contamination, and he called it the Philmont Landfill. He also said this site was never made compliant with federal waste laws.
Wow. Okay, so then let's talk just a little bit more about the history of this place.
So this landfill is located adjacent to the tech center. You might know it today as the West Virginia Regional Technology Park. But for decades, this 570 plus acre site was home to Union Carbide's research and development operations. It was their brain trust. And at its height, there were hundreds of PhDs working there. In 1999, Union Carbide took steps to sort of deal with all the hazardous waste on that property. In fact, it reported 70 different spots, including three landfills, and it came up with this plan with EPA to deal with it. But there's no mention of the Philmont landfill in this plan.
How did a giant landfill then escape regulation, and for how long?
So experts I talked to said that under federal law for regulating hazardous waste, it appears that this landfill should have been reported in 1980 when that law went into effect, but a search for records both from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the West Virginia DP have so far turned up nothing.
Okay, and can you talk a little bit more about what court documents have revealed about the contents of the waste site and maybe the extent of the contamination? What do we know?
So as part of this lawsuit, we have had access to emails between Union Carbide and the city of South Charleston from 2009 to 2012. And during that time, Carbide installed three monitoring wells, some on city property, on the other side of Davis Creek. And what they wanted to know is if chemicals from this landfill were migrating to the other side of the creek. And what the data show is yes. For example, one sampling record shows a level of dioxane, which is a synthetic industrial chemical. The EPA says it's likely a human carcinogen. This shows it at levels 177 times over the screening level.
So are people at risk who are around there or downstream?
So it's hard to say anything for certain at this point because we only have really limited data here. One thing to note, though, is we know that much more data exists. We know Union Carbide has at least 10 monitoring wells on or near the site, but the bulk of that information and the data is not currently available to the public. It's been placed under seal due to a protective order in the case that was requested by Union Carbide. WVPB and others have asked the judge to reconsider that order given the possible health and safety risks associated with this landfill. But I will note that experts I spoke to did say, given the data that we do have from 2011 and 2012, it shows there's enough to be seriously concerned.
Okay, so I know it's a little bit speculative, but assuming that this is a bigger problem, who would be responsible for cleaning up the mess? I mean, does it need to be cleaned up?
So everyone I spoke to agreed that more research needs to be done. Union Carbide and now Dow would be responsible for at the very least doing more investigation into the site. And if a cleanup is found to be warranted, they would be involved in that as well. And I will note in court documents, the company denies that there's any risk or that it is endangering the public or the environment.
Okay, great. Well, Brittany, thank you very much for your reporting, and maybe we'll check in with you in a couple of weeks to see if there have been any developments.
Thank you for having me.
This weekend on Inside Appalachia, we're exploring some of the unique stories that make up the Mountain State's history of aviation, including the story of Lewis Bennett, West Virginia's only World War I flying ace. To learn more, I caught up with his great-nephew, who happens to be U.S. Congressman David McKinley.
People have tried to make aviation part of the future, part of a diversification of our economy in West Virginia, and I laud it, but each time, it brings me back to Lewis Bennett.
McKinley's great-uncle, Lewis Bennett, was born in Weston, West Virginia, in 1894. His mother's family was from Wheeling. McKinley says he was something of a prodigy, building cars as a teen before heading off to university. At Yale in 1916 and 17, he was learning to fly while the First World War was raging on in Europe.
Lewis Bennett knew there was going to be this future, and particularly in warfare. He acquired an airplane in New York. After he graduated, he flew the plane down to Cape May, but in trying to take off, he crashed the plane, putting it back. He wound up, they put it on a train and they brought it back to Wheeling. But I think he found out how rudimentary these airplanes wouldn't be hard to make because he had been flying it enough times. He knew how to fly a plane.
Bennett came back to Wheeling and started the West Virginia Aircraft Company in Ohio County.
And they were making airplanes for the British and the French during World War I. Then, after building several of the planes, they then took the idea, well, now what we want to do is train a group of aviators to fly in World War I.
McKinley explains that Bennett was inspired by the Lafayette Escadrille, a unit of American fighter pilots flying as volunteers under French command during the First World War.
So what he tried to do, Lewis Bennett did, was put together this group of West Virginians. And I've got the names of all of them. I think there were 20 or 23 pilots, all from West Virginia, that he was training how to fly.
Bennett convinced the governor and the legislature at the time to financially support his dream of building the West Virginia Reserve Aerial Unit. Such a lad, tell your sweetheart not too high to be
proud of boys in line over there. And the governor actually gave them quite a bit of money. And then, towards the end of it, they pulled a plug.
The U.S. Defense Department was not on board.
And so Lewis Bennett, this is now fall of 1917, after he graduated from Yale, he said, okay, I've done my factory. I've got the factory up and running. I've got 20-some pilots trained. If you aren't going to let us fly as a unit, I'm going to sign up. So he did. He went to Canada and joined the Royal Flying Corps, was made a lieutenant in the RFC, finished his flight training, and then was shipped to England.
Send the word to beware. We'll be over. We're coming over. And we won't come back till it's over, over there.
That was West Virginia's U.S. Congressman David McKinley remembering his great uncle, Louis Bennett, to learn what happened to Bennett in Europe during the First World War and why a statue of him now stands in Wheeling. Tune in this weekend for Inside Appalachia, Sunday at 7 a.m. or 6 p.m. You can also find the podcast or listen online at wvpublic.org. Songwriters Hall of Fame member and twice Grammy-nominated artist Beth Nielsen Chapman performs on this weekend's encore episode of Mountain Stage. Chapman brings us our Mountain Stage Song of the Week, How We Love.
Life has taught me this, every day is new. And if anything is true, all that matters when we're through is how we love. Faced with what we lack, some dreams fall apart, but from the ashes, new dreams start. Is how we love. How we love. How we love. From the smallest act of kindness, in a word, a smile. In spite of our mistakes, chances come again. If we lose or if we win, all that matters in the end is how we love.
Our Mountain Stage Song of the Week, How We Love, by Beth Nielsen Chapman. You can hear more this Friday and Saturday night at 8, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from the Charleston Area Medical Center and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.